Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hanna baby. Introducing a new collection, Hanna Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hanna quality for your most precious gift. Hanna Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannaanderson.com.
This episode and the entire season is proudly brought to you by Pregnant Together, a virtual community for queer folks, solo parents, and anyone who's ever felt outside the box when it comes to creating your family. It's run by queer midwife Mariah Goodman, and it offers tons and tons of wonderful resources for all stages of parenting, from starting your journey to actually parenting those kiddos. Check it out at pregnanttogether.com. And listeners of the Queer Family Podcast get their first month free by clicking the link in our show notes of this here episode. Check it out and enjoy. It's wonderful.
The Queer Family Podcast. Love is love is love on the Queer Family Podcast. Love is love.
We were just like randomly looking at sperm donors, and it wasn't even like a serious anything. And we decided, let's just like try it. It was like an experiment, right? It was like, It was like, let's just kind of like try at home.
Be like as close to straight as you, non-queer as you can get. Like, we're just not trying. We're like, we're not, right? Like,
we didn't have any expectation that it was work. It was honestly like, let's just. Why not? Let's $500 of one vial of sperm. Let's just try it.
Yeah. It's like, let's try the pull-out method for a little while and see. Welcome, 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 y'all, to the Queer Family Podcast, the show all about family, but with gay. My name is Jamie. I am your host. And you, my friends, are tuning into the show that celebrates, highlights, uplifts, and normalizes LGBTQIA+ families in all of our beautiful identities. And on that note, I want to add that, yes, we are on a mission to celebrate and highlight and make aware all of the beautiful things that make our families unique and special, but also the normalization is really important here too. And I think this episode, this interview you're about to hear, really illustrates that fact well, because while we do make our families in many different unique ways and things look different on the outside and all the stuff that you know, we still deal with the same struggles that every other family does. That's why I'm really excited to share this interview with you with Lacey. Lacey's a gay mom. She's got 4 kids. And as you heard in that little beginning clip there, one of the kiddos came kind of by accident, or as close as of an accident as you can kind of get as a lesbian couple. And Lacey was a little bit worried after she told that story that was going to come off wrong, that it sounded like they were just like, oh, maybe we'll make a baby. And they didn't really put thought into it. But I want to assure everyone they put thought into every single one of their babies. And so Lacey has 4 children, 3 of which are triplets. And we laughed a lot in this chat, me and Lacey. And we also covered some pretty heavy topics. And I do want to let you all know, we do talk a little bit about a miscarriage in this episode. And we do talk about how Lacey's oldest child was diagnosed with cancer at the age of 4 and the family's journey through and around that. That's all I want to say. If these are triggering topics for you, please take care, do what you need to do. And also know that while we do cover these heavy topics, we did find moments to laugh and enjoy each other's company. It's just a really beautiful chat, and I can't wait for you to take a listen. Oh, I forgot to mention, also, Lacey grew up Mormon, so there's that whole layer too. I mean, we cover a lot, and it's also like super normal, all the struggles that Lacey's family is facing right now. is not unique to queer folks at all. So that is my point on that. I just want to say, if you're not following me on social media, get on over to Instagram, TikTok, Facebook, YouTube at the Queer Family Podcast. Watch the video episodes on YouTube. And also, you know, feel free to join my Patreon at patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast to support this here little show. I love y'all. I thank you for tuning in day after day. And I really hope you enjoy this episode. Take a listen. Helen, Beulah, Nicole, my beautiful assistants who don't exist because I am all alone in my room except for my crazy dog, Kira, who's under my covers right now. Please, please roll that tape. Thank you so much.
Queer Family Podcast, love is love.
Hi, Lacey.
Hi.
Well, I am really excited to dig in and hear your story. Just so everybody knows at home or in your car, wherever you're listening, I hear children because Lacey has just told me your wife is right now in the midst of trying to put all of the children down for a nap.
Yes, all of them down for a nap in toddler beds for the first time.
You know what? She deserves kudos because she's taking care of that so you can come be on this here little podcast.
Yep.
But if you hear children in the background, that's just the trials of nap time.
Correct.
All right, Lacey, let's get into this. Let's get into your
perfect
30-second elevator pitch. I'm going to put a timer up, as you know, because you're a listener. And here we go. On your mark, get set, go.
I am a former Mormon lesbian mom who has a four-year-old who with cancer and triplet two-year-old kiddos, my wife and I do. And we live in Boston. We just moved to Boston from Utah about 3 months ago, 4 months ago. That's our elevator pitch.
Boom. You did that really quick. Under 30. That's a winner right there. Good job. Lacey, we have some stuff to dig into. First of all, I just want to say, I can only imagine what it's like, what you're going through with your four-year-old. And my heart goes out to you and all the love and all the everything. And I think I'm going to hear a little bit more about it as we speak.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we'll talk.
So, and that's a lot of kids. You
it's a lot more than we had initially intended, but here we are.
Okay. Well, let's start from the beginning. What's your wife's name?
Gabby. Gabrielle. Right, so but she goes by Gabby.
You and Gabby. Can you take it to the beginning of you and Gabby?
Yeah. So we met, I think, 2017 in New York City. She grew up in Jersey City. Oh. And that's where she lived. And I, as soon as I graduated from college in Idaho, where I grew up, I moved to New York City. I decided that was my dream and wanted to do it. So I moved there and we met on Bumble.
Okay, wait. Now we got to take, I have to take it further back because you did drop a little seed that you were raised Mormon.
I was.
Mm-hmm. So can we dig into that? Can we talk about that and your coming out?
I was the fourth of six kids in a very Mormon family in southeastern Idaho. It's a lot growing up Mormon and, you know, realizing that you're gay. I think I was probably the first time I like had a conscious thought that maybe I was a little different was about like fourth grade. I remember like all the girls in my class being like obsessed with the boys and like passing notes. And I was like, whatever. I don't even, don't even care. I'm from a very small town. So there were no real like queer examples, like nobody to look to. I think the only, like the first time I heard the word lesbian, it was an insult in junior high, you know?
Yeah.
I remember my friend like crying because somebody had called her a lesbian and I'm like, I don't even know what that means, right? So it was, you know, just not the easiest way to grow up. I think people don't know much about Mormonism or like the teachings. Like it's changing a little bit, but you can't really be gay and Mormon while like they say, oh, you can, but you have to choose to be like celibate, right? Like those are your options, really.
That's not much of a choice.
Yeah, right. Like it's like telling you, you know, just don't be who you are. Just, you know. So I tried really hard to fit the mold. I served a Mormon mission, went on a Mormon mission.
Where was your mission?
Tried really hard. It was in Texas, Dallas, Texas.
Oh, Okay.
Riding a bike on a skirt in the middle of summer. And the skirt was not easy. And I think that was the first time I had like the conscious thought, like, maybe I do like girls. Cause so when you're on a Mormon mission, you have like what's called a companion. so you're with that person. Yeah, it's, I know.
Oh, sorry.
The phrasing. Yeah. I know. It's a little
No,
odd.
It's amazing because yeah. It's just a recipe for us. That's what it is.
So you're literally with this person 24/7. Like the rule is you're not allowed to be, it's sight and sound. So you're not allowed to be out of sight or out of sound of your companion.
Oh, 24/7.
Whoa. Unless you're in the bathroom. That's the only time.
Whoa. So this is like your roommate, like yeah, up here. Okay.
But like always, like you can't, like you sleep in the same room. It's constant. Oh. And I remember my last companion, I had a big crush on this person.
Yeah.
And I remember just like going into crisis, like full crisis. Like I was like, what is happening?
Yeah.
Kind of spiraling about it because it was just like, I can't do this.
Yeah. And like, who do you go to? There's nobody right, to go to. Right.
Right. And on your mission, it's not even like, at least then, now it's a little different. They've relaxed some of the rules. But when I was on my mission, the only communication you have with your family is email. You could FaceTime, like Zoom call, like once on Christmas and Mother's Day. So you didn't have communication. Like you don't have your like people, right? So like they put you into this.
It's like a bubble.
Yeah. It's like isolating and whatever. And when you're like in your early 20s, so you're like 19 to 22-ish is about the age I was 21.
Mm-hmm.
So it's like this early adulthood, figuring yourself out time period. And you're put in this like pressure cooker of like mess. And I was a mess.
Oh.
And like, I remember just like that. And that was the first time. And I think everybody around me was saying like, you know, just pray. Just guidance is like, forget yourself and just work for God or whatever. Right. Like,
right. Right. So turn just to like, Heavenly Father.
Yeah. Yeah. Turn there right. And, you know, everything will work out. He'll work it all out, right? Like it's almost right. This like, it's fine, whatever. It'll fix itself, which doesn't work, right?
And no.
Like I don't know that there is a situation that's going to really help.
Not a good idea.
Right. So it just like made it worse and worse. And when I came home from my mission, I was so, like depressed, not doing good at all. And then had to kind of figure out like where to go from there. And it's kind of interesting because I didn't actually come out or like leave for another few years because it's a really you're like entrenched in it and it's like everything. So being like Mormon is like everything about you
because it's your whole it's your whole life, right? Because you're set up in these communities and it's
a high demand religion. So you have callings, you have jobs. It's like all you do. In a lot of other religions, you can be super committed and super involved like you are in Mormonism. But in Mormonism, you have to be.
There's no lesser degree. It's either you're all in or you're not.
Right. There's no choice, right? Like, it's not like you can be like an unorthodox Mormon, which I think people are throwing around that now in more popular. But if you're really looking at what the Mormon church itself is teaching, you can't. You know, the Mormon church was a big pusher behind like Prop 8 in California.
Yeah.
And I was a teenager at that time. And I like vividly remember talking about it in school and hearing everybody's opinions. And I think was a big reason I stayed in the closet for so long. You know what
I mean? Like, I can imagine. Yeah.
Like teenagers or the early 20s that are like, don't remember that might think, you know, the Mormon church, oh, it can be accepting of like gay families or whatever. And no, the church itself, no. People within it, I think you can maybe argue that. I personally don't believe that you can really be like an active Mormon and like an ally. Because if you're like an ally, you're like supporting the community, right? Not just your family. And I think that's where it's like, we love and support you and Gabby, but okay, but hate the sin, love the sinner.
That's it, yeah.
And I'm like, you can't really do that, especially when what you're hating is someone's identity.
We can't change this. It is what it is, right?
You are who you are, right? Trust me, I tried to change it. Like, you know, it's not something that you can just flip a switch and turn on and off.
You can't pray it away.
No. And so I actually didn't come out until I lived in New York.
When you came out, what did coming out look like? Like, did you come out to everyone, or were you like gay in New York? And then like,
well, the first thing I did was shave half of my head. So that was the first step, right?
Yeah. Okay. You went there. Okay.
Right. And then the first time I kind of like stepped in the waters was when I was moving to New York. I went to dinner with my best friend from high school. And I like said to her, you know, I think I might be into girls. That's kind of what I said. And she's like, okay, cool. She had already she's straight, but just kind of like leaving the church transition. Like she'd kind of been stepping out. So I knew that she was like a safe person to kind of have that conversation with. And then we left it where it was.
Yeah.
And then I moved, and it was probably just a month or two into living in New York City. I called my mom and I said, I think I said the same thing. I said, I think I might be gay. And that's like, if you're saying that, like you probably are. You know, it's not like.
Yeah. Everybody who's not gay, if you hear that from someone, definitely they are. It's just, we're just like trying to soften the blow.
Right.
I think I might be. Yeah.
I do not fault my mother in this at all. She's grown a lot from where she was. Her response was like, okay, like I'm not surprised. But then her next piece of advice was like, go talk to the bishop of the church. I'm like, in retrospect, I don't know that that was the best advice, but she was doing with what she had, right? Like she was making the best decision that she could at the time. And thankfully, I was in New York City. And so it's a different, I think they have a different point of view than I would have been if I had been in Utah or Idaho. And so I went to this bishop who I barely knew. And I said, you know, my mom asked me to come. And it was just like checking a list for me. So, right. You know, she asked me to do this. I'm going to do this to tell her I did. Right. Like that's going to do. And so I did. And thankfully this man said to me, he said, you know, I love and support you. And he said, to be completely frank, like this is what the church says. The church says your choices are you leave and you live your life, or you stay here and you be celibate. And he said, whatever your choice is, I totally support and I understand. And if you decide not to be, you know, within the church anymore. I don't think that's what the church would advise, he said, but I'm grateful that that is how he like handled it.
Go ahead, Bishop. Yeah.
It's like, you know what? It's okay. Go do you. It's fine. And he connected me with a couple of people that he knew that had left. So that kind of gave me a little bit of a community of people who kind of knew where I was coming from. And then coming out to everybody else, I called my sisters and told them, because a lot of people will say like, oh, I knew, or I knew you probably were, or like things like that. And I was like, you actually didn't, because I didn't tell you. Because I said, mom said she knew. That's what I said to like my baby sister. And she was like, oh, I didn't know, but I'm not like surprised. Like, you know, and she goes, I didn't know because you didn't tell me, but I'm not surprised. That for me was like, okay, yeah. For me, it was like when somebody said, oh, I knew, I was like, well, I didn't even know. So how did you, you didn't.
Right. It's right. Like, what were you picking up on?
I know.
What, like what was I super, like, what was it?
I think people say it as almost like a defense mechanism, right? Like, oh, I knew. It's fine. I already knew.
So you come out, you're in New York City, and then you meet Gabby.
Yes.
Okay. And then what happens?
We definitely U-hauled 100%. I don't think people realize. So I was living in Harlem and she was in Jersey City, and it was like, you know what? It's just easier. I'm paying rent in an apartment in Harlem and I'm not going there. So we gave up my apartment in Harlem. We gave that up and I moved in with her. We got married pretty quickly after that too.
When you know, right?
We got married at City Hall and it was great.
Oh, wow. How'd your family take it?
Good. My parents actually were able to come. So that was good.
Okay. All right.
I know.
Yay.
Yeah.
Okay. This is wonderful. Okay. So you got married. You hauled it. You got married right away. Shotgun wedding at a city hall. It's like you were knocked up already, but you weren't, because I know you, I know that's not possible. So when right. did like the talk of kids come into this?
So we knew, we talked about wanting kids before we got like pretty early. We both knew we wanted kids. For me, I knew I never wanted to be pregnant, and my wife did. So, mm-hmm. and I always wanted kids, but have never wanted pregnancy. My mom is a certified nurse midwife, so I've been around pregnancy and wasn't something I really wanted ever. But my wife did, and so that worked out. And I don't.
It's the beauty of two uteruses.
I know. And for me, like biology was never important in like connecting to, like it never was something that I felt strongly about in connecting to a child. So that's kind of how we made the decision of like who. But in terms of when, like talked about like when, and we're like, you know, we're not sure. We wanted, just kind of wanted to see, because we know it can take a while to get pregnant. So we went to a fertility doctor just to kind of have a conversation and see. We weren't like in a rush, and they gave us like statistics of like successful pregnancies, I guess, with like IUI or at home ICI versus like IVF and all of those things, just kind of like. But I remember ICI and IUI, like unmedicated, according to what they gave us and what I remember, had a pretty similar like success rate. And so we were like, you know what? We can try it at home. And it was honestly, we were like, we were just like randomly looking at sperm donors, and it wasn't even like a serious anything. And we decided, let's just like try it. It was like an experiment, right? It was like, it was like, let's just kind of like try at home.
Be like as close to straight as you, non-queer as you can get. Like, we're just not trying. We're like, we're not, right? Like,
we didn't have any expectation that it was work. It was honestly like, let's just, why not? Let's $500 bucks of one vial of sperm. Let's just try it.
Yeah. It's like, let's try the pull-out method for a little while and see, you know?
Right. And so we did that, and we had zero expectation that it would work. Obviously, by the way, I'm telling you the story, it worked.
I have a feeling. Yeah.
Of course it was intentional, but also like we did not expect it. It was as close to like an accidental queer pregnancy as, you know, lesbian pregnancy as you can get. Yeah. Right. Like it was
a lesbian knockup story. That's what this is. Yeah. It's amazing.
And Jonah, our first, he was ICI, and we only bought the one vial of sperm from the sperm bank, and that was the last vial of sperm this donor had and doesn't donate anymore. So
right. He's retired. That's awesome. Okay. So, and you moved.
We'd moved. So he was born in Idaho.
And so now you are a family of three. And then how you get those triplets? Like what?
Right. So we talked about it, and we'd like, okay, great. We're in this. We're in it. We loved being a family of three. It was so fun. It was great. So my wife has two siblings, but they're both very much younger than her. Like, and she always wanted to have kids kind of close together. We wanted like a 2-year age gap was kind of our hope, which it is. They are 2 years apart. We were like, okay, he was probably about 8 months. And we said, okay, let's like try again. We were like, okay, like it'll probably take a couple tries, but we'll probably do it at home again. Right. Like it worked the first time on the last one. And then, and it did not. And we had to get a new donor. So we're kind of like starting from scratch again, right? I think we could have probably reached out, but it wasn't super important to us that it be the same donor. We tried at home 6 times.
Oh, wow.
ICI at home, unmedicated 6 times. And it did not work.
It's so shocking, right? It's so shocking how every birth really is, every conception is such a miracle when you think about it. Yes, there's so much science involved.
The timing has to be right and everything.
And it worked so easily the first time, you would just think, why wouldn't it? The second, and it's not that much later. There's no givens when it comes to this stuff.
So we tried 3 times, and then she had a polyp removed. And then we tried 3 more times. And I think we went through 2 donors.
Okay, that's what I was going to say. I was going to ask. Because you didn't buy it all at once. Did you go like piece by piece, one by one?
We did one by one because it wasn't like we were buying the same donor as our first. It wasn't like we'd found this donor. I know a lot of couples like agonize over the donor.
Yeah.
And I can totally understand that, but it wasn't at all right for us. It wasn't at all like that. There were like,
that's great.
There were like three or four things that were really important to us, you know, and the rest were like, yeah, it's fine.
It did not turn into a search for a superhuman. So every time you had to go back, it was like, meh, we'll try it. So you tried it with the same one for three and, or however many. And then you're like, oh, let's try another one. And that's amazing. Okay. That's great to be able to be flexible like that. Is a superpower, I think, when it comes to our family building journeys.
And then that first one came like back into stock. And at that point we had, because it had taken six tries, we're like, okay, let's go see a doctor.
Yeah, let's figure out.
We went to the fertility center. Mm-hmm. And at that point we decided, okay, let's do IUI. And they wanted us to do medicated IUI.
Mm-hmm.
So we did. We did one IUI medicated with the original donor from the first like set of three.
Uh-huh.
And she got pregnant, but she had a miscarriage. So she missed miscarriage, wrong word. So her body like didn't recognize that it was a miscarriage. We went in for like the 6 week ultrasound, like pregnancy. It was measuring like small and there was no heartbeat. And she wasn't like, her body wasn't like going into a miscarriage. So she had to have a DNC.
That's tough.
And it was really tough for both of us. I think it, you know, and it was really hard on her body. You know, we had the miscarriage and we like were talking and we said, you know, let's try one more time. And then if it doesn't work this time, we'll just be a one kid family. For her, she was like, I don't know that I can like go through that loss like more. Like we had the one and we can try again, but I just don't know.
Oh, that's so tough. I'm sorry.
It was really, really hard. We were like, okay, we'll do the next like cycle.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.
What's the easiest choice you can make? Window instead of middle seat? Picking a vendor who sends a great gift basket? Outsourcing business tasks you hate? What about selling with Shopify? Whether you're selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage? Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell. Wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/try. Go to shopify.com/try now to grow your business, no matter what stage you're in. Shopify.com/try.
So it was probably like 2 months, 3 months after the miscarriage. And it was the same, like the same recipe, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a new donor. So it was a completely, this was the only time we did it with this donor.
This is your fourth donor at this point.
Fourth donor.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Okay.
Yeah. We weren't super connected to, you know.
That's the thing. We run the gamut and we all come to this journey with our own things that matter and the things that don't matter. Like, and it would have probably killed me personally to have to go back and choose a fourth donor. It would have been like, oh my God, I can't do this anymore because I overthought every single little thing, you know? So it's refreshing to hear.
Right. For us, the biggest pieces that were like important, and this may sound weird, were like height, because all of the men in our family, both sides are very tall. So we kind of felt like, okay, if they need to kind of fit in with that, that was a big one. And then just the genetic testing were the big pieces.
Making, right. Okay.
Yeah. That like uh-huh. really made a difference to us.
So you do the same recipe for this next one. And what happened?
Before they did the IUI, they like measured the follicles, right? Mm-hmm. However many would, you know, give out. So they said that there were four like ready when we went to do the IUI.
Right.
And they
which
like,
is like normal.
Us. Yeah. And they like yeah. said, you know, statistically, it's probably you might get two. This is, I don't even remember what the percentage was. You might get twins. The chance of more than two like sticking is like less than 1% chance. We can do it this cycle or we can wait and like right. try again and try for less. If that's like, you know what, let's just go for it. Like two is fine. Like twins is fine. That's what we had thought. You know, twins is fine. It's fine. So we obviously went ahead with it and she was testing positive, like early, like, cause she like tested right early. Right. Yeah. Yeah. Because you know, your brain gets into this. Is it, you know, you test before you're supposed to.
Everybody does. It's so hard to wait.
Yeah. And she was testing early, like testing positive early, like very positive. It was like, so, and we're like, that's crazy. And yeah. so then they had us do the HCG test and it was so high. It was like very, very high. And we're like, okay. And we told my mom what it was because she knew like they were going through it and she's in the medical field and she's like, oh, so it's probably twins. And we're like, right. yeah, probably. So we like go to the ultrasound, which previously was where we had found, you know, the miscarriage. We're like, so like we're nervous, we're, mm-hmm. you know, we're scared. Like it's, you know it's positive, but that doesn't necessarily mean it's like going to, you know, work out.
Right.
And so we go to the ultrasound at the fertility clinic and immediately I see two, like I see the two and that's kind of what we were expecting. And then yeah. she like went around and she's like, oh, here's the third.
Oh my God.
And we're like, oh, we both just are like silent and we're like, oh my goodness.
Oof, you got pregnant.
she
very pregnant.
Yes, it was surprising, and so triplets. That's what was happening.
I know everything worked out well because you have triplets now who are doing toddler bed training as we speak.
They're doing wonderfully, but
congrats!
Right, they came at 27 weeks, but Ooh. Are doing fabulous.
Okay.
You'd never right. know if you looked at them.
Well, you have tall jeans, so.
Yes, right. Well, one of them is, you would never, she's teeny. She's the tiniest little human.
Oh.
And she just has the biggest personality. People yeah, look at her and go. Think she's much younger than she is. And then she starts talking and you're like, yeah, she's two guys.
Yeah, that's so fun. Okay, yeah. so now it's like, all right, we're going to have four kids. What happens? Like, take me through the story from, you know, finding out you had triplets to where you are today.
We were living in Idaho, but they were born in Salt Lake, Utah, which has okay. like the best medical care in like the Intermountain West in that area.
Mm-hmm.
So they were at the University of Utah in the NICU. So we were traveling back and forth. We were living in my parents' basement at that point. And so mm-hmm. when the babies were in the NICU, Jonah, who at the time was two, was mostly with my parents. And they were born in November, the triplets mm-hmm. were. And then in like the last week, like right before Christmas, Jonah started getting like a fever. We thought he probably just has a virus. He probably, you know, all of this. My dad took him to the emergency room on like January 3rd. He had what's called a petechiae, which is just a tiny little bruise in the middle of his hand, just like a point prick bruise.
Mm-hmm.
And they ended up doing a blood test and found that his blood counts were just weird, like off.
Uh-huh.
And they said, you know, here are kind of your options of like what this could be based on what his blood looks like. And the best option was actually cancer of everything that it could have been.
Oh my God.
And so we were transferred to the Children's Hospital in Salt Lake, which was just connected by a bridge to where the babies were in the NICU.
Oh,
and then Jonah went to the Children's Hospital.
Oh my god.
And he was diagnosed with acute lymphoblastic leukemia on January 4th, I think, of 2022.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, so we had 4 kids in the hospital at the same time.
Oh my god, Lacey.
Yeah.
Oh, my heart just like stopped for a second.
I know. It was not an easy time. It was very.
I can imagine. I can only imagine, like, holy God. So you have 3 preemies trying to make it through.
Yeah.
And then you have this 2-year-old with cancer. Like, what the fuck?
Yeah. And that's kind of what it felt like. What the fuck?
Yeah. What the fuck? Ugh, my heart goes out to you.
Yeah. So he started treatment right away. He responded really well.
What was the treatment, like chemo or?
Yeah, so chemo. So leukemia, childhood leukemia, is the most common cancer in kids. Mm-hmm. His type specifically is the most common. It has a really good like success rate in treatment, but it's long. He's still in active treatment, and he will be till
like 2 years ago.
And he'll still be in active treatment till April of 2025, so another full year.
Oh my god.
And it was really, really intense in the beginning. The first 6 or so months, he was getting chemo 3 times a week. And we were still living in Idaho. And so at that point, we moved to Salt Lake to be closer to the doctors. Because the babies were being followed by specialists at that point too. And he had oncology. You know, it was just a lot.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You were at the hospital.
All the time. Yeah. All the time.
I want to just take a moment just to like take space for you and your wife. And like, how do you give everything you need to give to both of these situations? Right?
Yeah.
You have 3 newborns and a child who's sick. Like, how did you get through it?
I don't know. Honestly, like, I don't know. Oh. I think we were living with my parents at the point, so that helped a little bit, but it was exhausting. I think we didn't sleep like at all. You know, you're up with the babies, and Jonah didn't sleep well because all the medication going through his body, everything, like he's just in pain, uncomfortable. Mm. People ask like how you do it, and you just do it. Like you just don't have a choice, you know, you do, but like, not really, you know, you just do it. And my wife and I talk about it, and we don't remember a lot of it, which like is a lot of, I think, trauma. Mm-hmm. I don't remember. I think, and this is the hard part for both of us. Like, we don't remember like holding the babies when they were tiny. Like, we don't remember like you look at pictures and you kind of remember, but I don't. Like with Jonah, I have like memories of like holding them and rocking him to sleep, and like, and with the babies, I just don't.
There's a lot going on.
I don't know how old they were when they sat up, when they, like, I can look through my phone and figure it out probably, but it's not, I don't have those significant memories because it was just so much like get through, you know, you just get through the day and you get through the night and you get through. My wife and I are like just now, like within the past 6 months or so, really processing all of that.
I can imagine that it's going to take a while, and you know, you have to give yourself grace here.
Oh yeah.
Right? Because you're still really in it right now. Oh, I mean, you have 2-year-olds and a 4-year-old who's still going through. Like, are the what are the treatments like now? Like, how is life now? You made it through that really rough patch, but like,
so now we live in Boston. We moved to Boston in the beginning of November of last year, and part of that is to be in Boston for both medical as well as schooling options for the kids. Mm-hmm. Now he takes pills at night every night, takes chemo pills at home. He goes in once a month to get chemo, and then every 3 months he gets intrathecal chemo, which is in his spine. So he goes under and he gets into a lumbar puncture, and they put chemo in his spinal fluid. So that's every 3 months, and that's tomorrow. He goes in tomorrow for that. So he calls it a hospital nap.
Okay, you poor babies.
Yeah,
is it?
I know.
How is he with it?
Honestly, the hardest part and the hardest medication that we've dealt with, like chemo was rough, and losing the hair was rough. And, you know, he has his hair back now, my cute little redhead. And, you know, if you just look at him, you can't really tell. He doesn't have like the outward, but every 3 months he also has to do 5 days of steroids, and the steroids are the worst. Because it just like brings out, it's just, you know, like roid rage is really what it, like, in a little 4-year-old who can't comprehend, he's just so sad.
Just trying to process those emotions.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that's probably the hardest medication that we have to deal with. In terms of like how he handles it, he rolls with it really, you know, it's all he really remembers. Mm-hmm. And we've worked really hard to like normalize it for him. Mm-hmm. He knows he goes to clinic to get chemo, and we're like, why do you, you know, we talk to him about why, and he's like, yeah, because I have cancer. And it's just very normal for him. He does a lot of like hospital play and processing, like his toys go on ambulances because they have a fever, because that's happened to him. And, you know, he like processes through play. It's just very normal for him. And we've worked really hard to like make it that way, because we don't, obviously our hope and our goal is like he just lives his life after this, and this is just a part of his story. And so we want it to be very not a huge deal for him to talk about, and just normal, but also not like this defining piece of who he is. You know, it's a part of him, but we don't want it to be just all he is defined by.
You started to say he responded really well, and I think I cut you off. So
no, he responded really well, and he hasn't had any sign of cancer since about 6 weeks into treatment.
Oh, wow. But it has to continue for this long. Mm-hmm. Holy moly.
Yeah. And then he'll still be followed for like 5 or so years before they say, so after 5 years, they'll say he's cured. After 5 years, after he's done with treatment. So, because your risk of like relapse after 5 years after treatment, it goes like to almost zero at that point. Yeah. So he'll be like 10 when that happens.
Oh my God.
But yeah.
But that'll be a good day.
It will be. It's, you know, I think my wife and I live with a lot of like fear of it coming back, but he doesn't, you know, he doesn't have that, you know.
Oh my God. I mean, you're strong. You're super strong.
I think you just kind of, when you're put in a situation, you just have to, you know?
Yeah. You have no choice.
You know, people say like, I don't know if I could do it. And I, you know, you could.
Right. You have to.
You have to, you know, you love your kids. So you could, you know?
Yeah. A friend from college where like her daughter was diagnosed with cancer when she was young. She reached out and said, you should do a feature on cancer. It's Cancer Awareness Month. And anyway, so that's how we connected anyway. And I was having some conversations with parents about their children and cancer. And I asked her like, what do I say? How do I approach it? And basically everything I have just said in this interview was like what my friend Claudia was like, well, don't ever say this. Don't ever say this. So I apologize.
No, like, it's okay.
She was like, don't say, I can only imagine. That's triggering. Know. She was like, don't say, you're so strong. Like all the things I just literally said. So I just want to acknowledge that. And like, you know, the bottom line is my heart is like with you.
Yeah.
And I know how hard it has to be.
And it is. It's very hard. And, you know, on top of that, like having, you know, the triplets come so early. And like there was a point in time where we weren't really sure what our family would look like. Like, is he going to survive? Or are all the babies going to make it? You know,
oh my God.
What will they, you know, what will their outcomes be developmentally? Like, what's that going to look like? And I think a lot of that, like my wife and I are still dealing with that. Like my wife was diagnosed with postpartum OCD. And we both think that's probably a lot of trauma and PTSD coming through too, you know, like.
Yeah, probably. I mean, you were hit a whammy.
Yeah, like just the amount, the pure, like everything all at once.
Yeah, I mean, you have to give yourselves grace and take time for yourself. I know that's like impossible, but.
Right. I know. like find what your, time? No,
yeah, right. Like find your community. And it's great that you had your parents for a time. And I don't know what your community is like now that you're in Boston.
Trying to find some, I think, you know, and that is hard, you know, finding community as an adult. And coming from my background, community was just your church people.
It's there, right? Like, right? It's just built there. In.
Yeah. So we're both kind of figuring out how to build community now, but that's partly why we, you know, why we wanted to move to Boston. And, you know, we've always loved Boston, but we just, you know, it is just much more progressive.
Yeah.
We're looking at schools for Jonah for next year and see, like, we want him to have the experience of like not being the only kid with queer parents.
Uh-huh.
And being able to like see people who have families like him, like,
mm-hmm.
you know, I don't think people realize how big of a deal it is to like see that. Like he watches Peppa Pig and there's a polar bear. Penny the polar bear has two moms.
Yeah, that's a newer thing, right? Because I don't remember that.
Yeah, it is
from my kids. Yeah.
And he gets so excited. He said she has two moms just like me.
Yeah, it is. It's so important. I just have one more question to ask you. We spent some time talking about your religion and how you had to make a choice, and you made a choice because of who you are. So with all of this that has happened, has it made you think about faith anymore? Like, have you thought about losing that aspect of your life? Do you miss it? Like, talk to me about that.
The short answer is no. Mm-hmm. And I think that surprises a lot of people. Because I think when things, like when tragic things happen, I think a lot of people like turn to their faith.
Mm-hmm.
There's like nothing wrong with that. But for me, that never, like when I think of my faith, it's all very trauma. Like it's all very like there's not, and there were positive things in that time. And I, you know, I know that like I've been able to kind of like reconcile the decisions my parents made in like raising me in the faith. And they're still part of, you know, the Mormon church. I would say at a different level than they were when we were growing up. You know, they're not as intense about it at all. Obviously they're very supportive of me in my life and, you know, adore my children, obsessed with my children. For me, I can't really believe in a God, at least in the God that I was taught about, that like, it felt like the way that I was taught about God, like he plans your life. Mm-hmm. He like plans your life and it's like, do you know what I mean? Like this is like he doesn't just allow things to happen. He has his hand in it, right? And so for me, it's like I don't want a God that like makes these shitty things happen, right? Like even allows it to happen. If he does have like power to like stop things from happening or like intervening, why wouldn't he? And being a parent, even more so, because like being taught that like he is like your heavenly father, and like if he has the power, why wouldn't he? Because if I can stop any piece of pain for my kids, I would. Like I would do anything to like stop that. So if it doesn't click with me, because that's not how I would be as a parent, right?
Like it doesn't add up, right? No, it doesn't compute.
Right. And like feeling that love and seeing my kid go through the pain and not being able to do anything about it. Is like, how could you have the power to do something about it and not? For me, I have a lot of comfort, and this may sound, you know, weird to some people, in, you know, we are just humans figuring it out, and this is the life we have. And I honestly feel like I live better and a fuller and, like, honestly, a kinder, more empathic, like, life in that, in saying, you know what, this is my shot, this is my only chance, in not worrying about, like, an afterlife or...
Right.
You know, the next or what comes next. Like for me, it's like separates from what's happening today, right? Like what's happening in my little world.
Mm-hmm. That makes a lot of sense. And, you know, as somebody who I wasn't raised with religion, I don't have that. I always wonder like how, what it would feel like to actually have been raised with a certain religion, with a certain point of view on this, because I have none. I mean, except what I've come up with on my own, which I'm really happy with what I've come up with and I feel good about it. But you know what I mean? Like, I'm not afraid of if I chose the right path in God. I don't have that at all. So
it created so much anxiety in me that I like, it feels much better to just not worry about that. And I 100% like believe, like I support you in whatever like gives you what you need and supports you. But for me, it's not, I don't feel like I'm missing anything religion wise, you know, I just, it doesn't connect with me. You know, I very much like, I love humanity and humans and people. Like I'm a social worker. I love people and just God doesn't.
It doesn't resonate, right? So, you know, but whatever works for you, anybody out there, right? Whatever works for you.
I know that you've done interviews with a lot of people who do, who are able to like keep their Christian faith and all of that. And I think that's so wonderful and awesome. Like to each their own, right? Whatever they, whatever builds them up and gives them that, I think that's great. And I have like social media friends and friends who, you know, are trying to kind of like bridge gaps between like more conservative religions and like the queer community. And I think that's really important because there are kids that are being raised in those religions who are queer and who deserve to like feel good in their faith while also being okay with themselves.
Yeah.
And I like commend them for that work.
It's important work too. Yeah. That's such a good point. That's important work too, because there, like you, like we just said, there are folks who really do care about faith and, and continuing on in whatever path of faith they were in. And then there are folks like you and I who it doesn't mean it anything to us, and that's fine too.
Yeah,
right?
For sure.
But it is important. You're right. Especially when you think about the youth, when you think about the kids.
Oh yeah, the kids. Yeah. Because I can't imagine how much of a difference it would have made for me had I been able to see, you know, not necessarily in my faith, but just at all, you know, positive queer people at all.
Yeah, I love those queers. I love positive queer people out there. Just be out there queer and proud, y'all. Come on, let's find our people. Let's do it.
I know.
I send you all the love in the world. Now the whole, all the listeners are in your court and sending all the love and the healing vibes. And
yeah,
I mean, it sounds like Jonah's awesome and pulling through like
a champ. Great.
And then those triplets are just going to give you a run for your money. And that's just what it is.
Always, always, for sure.
But it's so awesome. And I really appreciate you telling your story. This has been beautiful.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me.
Yeah. This is not goodbye. We're going to hear more.
For sure.
In the future.
Yeah.
Love is love.
Whew. Well, folks, I hope you enjoyed that episode as much as I enjoyed it. And if you did enjoy it, feel free to listen to another or watch another. I have so many episodes for your listening or viewing pleasure. Just go pick one and enjoy. There's a lot. There really is. And also, if you really do like this show, please, I know I say it all the time, but please do consider supporting the show on Patreon. You're just going to go to patreon.com/thequeerfamilypodcast. You're going to pick a tier, you're going to join, and you're going to get that bonus content. And you're also going to get my love and adoration for the rest of my life. I love you all. Thanks for tuning in. Keep on tuning in, and I'll see you next time. Mwah.
Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com. Our family has grown. Welcome to the world, Hannah baby. Introducing a new collection, Hannah Soft, made with Tencel. It's so breathable, with stretchy comfort for all of baby's first moments. And it's cool and gentle on their skin all year round. Entrusted Hannah quality for your most precious gift. Hannah Soft, made to last. Shop now at hannahanderson.com.